Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, August the 31st, 2012, and it is Japan Dolphins Day. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here by my co-host, Alon Cohen.
Hey there.
And guest co-host, Denise Swanson.
Greetings.
Welcome, everyone. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the same rights that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first segment today, I wanted to bring back a little bit of New York City to you from my recent trip there, which is why Denise is here to help me out today, as evidently I have a pretty poor memory when it comes to remembering all the details of a whirlwind of a 4-day trip there. So thanks for coming again, Denise.
My pleasure.
So we'll be presenting to you travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating in New York City, and we will be sharing our thoughts and recommendations of some of the most amazing food experiences in New York for plant-based eating. And I promised you there were many, but we only have 14 minutes to share these, so we will see how that goes. And for our feature interview today, in recognition of today being Japan Dolphins Day, with multiple events happening worldwide to mark this occasion, we'll have on the show with us a local Vancouver activist who went to Taiji, Japan, actually two times last year to fight for the dolphins as part of the ongoing Cove Guardian campaign led by the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. She'll be updating us on what is happening in Taiji, and her name is Marley Daviduk. And what is happening in Taiji these days, or going to be happening starting this week, is the drive and slaughter of tens of thousands of dolphins for the entertainment and food industries, and Marley will be sharing her experiences with us and what it was like to be in Taiji last year to bear witness to the slaughter there. The official Taiji Japan slaughter begins tomorrow on September 1st. This interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please stay tuned. At this time, I just want to remind our listeners that Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, is switching frequencies. That's right. So as of September the 10th, we'll no longer be broadcasting from 102.7 FM in Vancouver, but rather from 100.5 FM. So please make sure to start tuning into Co-op Radio from our new frequency, 100.5 FM, as of September 10th. And the first Animal Voices show airing from the new frequency will be on Friday, September 14th. So, sadly for us, Alon's going to be leaving Animal Voices soon, and in fact, you're leaving the country, going to Oxford University.
I never asked
you this before. What will you be studying there?
I'll be studying political theory and politics, specifically looking at the history and politics of friendship.
Wow, that sounds really unique and interesting. Mm-hmm. And with that, we're going to be having an opening for a new co-host and co-producer at the Animal Voices radio show. So we mentioned it last week, and I just wanted to put out a call again for a co-host and co-producer. If you think that this is something that might interest you, we are looking for someone who would be able to attend at least two shows per month and produce once per month, and they must be able to attend on Fridays during the show time. They need to have strong research and presentation skills, public speaking experience and or ability, time management skills, eager to engage in discussions on air, and of course, interest in animal rights issues, animal welfare issues, and diplomatic, peaceful approach to activism and outreach, and dedication to being a voice for the animals and passionate about animal issues, which would be a great bonus. So if you want to find out more about what this position entails, and if this sounds like something that might interest you, I invite you to send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com to please let us know more about you, your interests, your experience, and we'll take it from there. So with that, I'm going to conclude, and Alon is going to talk about an animal rights workshop that you're going to be presenting next week at the Victoria Anarchist Book Fair. I'm looking forward to hearing what that might entail.
Definitely. Well, Like you said, the Victoria Anarchist Book Fair is happening next week. It officially starts next weekend on September 8th and 9th. But for people who are interested in going early to hang out in Victoria throughout the week, there's something called the Festival of Anarchy. And so there's a series of workshops, some of them presented by individuals such as Gord Hill and different First Nations artists and activists. I will be presenting a workshop that Friday, so the day before the workshop proper actually starts. So that will be Friday, September 7th. It'll be presented as part of the Black Paw Print Collective, which is an anarcho-feminist collective in Vancouver, which is dedicated towards total liberation and intersectional analysis. And the workshop itself will be held at 1 p.m. at Camus Books. That's at 2590 Quadra in Victoria, BC, of course. And what it is, we've titled the workshop Animal Liberation and Anarchism, Challenging the Species Hierarchy. What it's going to be is a facilitated attendee-led workshop, which will consider how non-human animals are part of the anarchist struggle towards total liberation. We'll discuss our personal radicalization into the animal liberation movement. So, of course, attaching that political and personal dynamics together. We'll be chatting about worker and animal conditions in factory farms, the need for an intersectional analysis that includes non-human animals, justification for including non-human animals and veganism in anarchist theory and praxis, and why animal liberation is, of course, a part of the anti-capitalist resistance and prison justice movement. So there's going to be tons.
That's a lot.
Yeah, there's going to be tons there, of course.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's the timeline. There hasn't been a time schedule set for it, but of course, the attendees there, we're going to hopefully gathering together people who are already concerned about social justice issues and identify as anarchists, but maybe aren't vegan or animal rights related. And of course, people on the other side who do care about animals, but want to incorporate more of a total justice or social justice approach to their work in a kind of a holistic manner. So hopefully we'll be getting a huge discussion of people together and work out how to, you know, make these kind of different theories and movements more in line with one another. So I'm super excited about that, and hopefully it's going to be really, really awesome.
For our listeners who aren't as educated or knowledgeable about what anarchism entails, can you just speak about that a little bit?
Well, of course, it's probably that's a very complex question, and we've actually, people that want to go back into our shows, we actually recently, a while ago,
yeah,
we interviewed a professor at, I forget where he was from, actually, but he was a professor.
United States.
He was from the U.S., definitely, an anarchist. He was a professor that teaches anarchist theory, and specifically with an approach to racism, colonialism, and animals. And of course, to me, it seems to me anarchism is something that wants to take, as opposed to being sort of this idea that is total chaos and everything, that's probably more so seen as anarchy. But anarchism is kind of a political movement or as a political ideology, something that takes into account the fact that the people that know best about how to govern themselves, ourselves, is of course us. And so we ought to take into our own selves, our own abilities to empower ourselves and to govern our own lives. So outside of status structures, institutions, or sort of individuals or corporate bodies that think they know better and best how to govern our own lives.
That can definitely be applied to animal rights issues. And I have a suggestion for you. If the opportunity arises before you leave, would you like to present what you're going to be presenting at your workshop, perhaps something like part of that on the radio show?
Sure, I'd be glad to.
Well, we don't really know what's happening for the next few weeks schedule-wise, because you're going to be at the book fair next Friday. But yeah, there's an option. I think that would be super interesting and very applicable.
Definitely. Hopefully I will take a recorder there, and if the participators or attendees are willing and consentful of it, hopefully I'll be able to record some of it. We can actually play some of that on the radio itself.
Well, thank you so much for that, Elon.
Hey, did you hear about the Vancouver Co-op radio frequency change?
Yeah, the singer does have a great range.
No, the change.
Their music's pretty progressive, but I wouldn't call it strange.
No, the Vancouver Co-op radio frequency change. They're moving to the 100.5 FM frequency on September 10th. They'll still have the same local, passionate, community-made programming, but their signal will be stronger and in stereo at 100.5 FM.
Oh, cool. I think I need to move away from the speakers. I can't hear anything you're saying.
What?
Exactly.
For more info about the Vancouver Co-op Radio frequency change, please visit cooperadio.org.
You're on, Denise.
All right, events. So please grab your pencil and paper if handy.
You've got to take notes.
Yep. So please come to Japan Dolphins Day 2012 at the Japanese Consulate in Vancouver, BC.
Okay, I'll be there.
Yep. It's happening right now on August 31st from 12 to 3 right now. Rallies and peaceful protests will be held in front of the Japanese embassies and consulates worldwide. The events are to protest the September 1st start of the annual Taiji Dolphin Cull, as seen in the Academy Award-winning documentary The Cove. The message is positive. Japan, let the dolphins live and be free. So this is at the Vancouver Consulate General of Japan, 1177 West Hastings, today from 12 till 3.
And I actually wasn't joking when I said I'll be there, and then you're coming with me after the show, so we're going to be a little bit late, but it's pretty close to where we are here at the radio station. It's really an issue that's really dear to my heart, and might as well just go over there and at least get to attend some of it.
Yeah, 1177 West Hastings. Mm-hmm. Be there, be square. And coming up also fairly soon, on Sunday, September 9th, that's only 9 days away, the BC SPCA will hold its annual fundraising walk called Pause for a Cause. If you're Googling that, Pause is spelled P-A-W-S. Pause for a Cause. Please note, online registration closes this Thursday, September 6th. After that, you need to register in person at the event. It's free for under 18s, and for adults, it's $25. Bring along your canine friend to Lumberman's Arch near the Stanley Park bus loop to register at 10 a.m. There will be prizes and much entertainment, and the walk begins at 12 noon. That's Sunday, September 9th.
Great. Well, for today, our headlines for August 31st on 2012, of course. I always love these kind of stories. The first store, Spicer Furs, and the other first store, which many people in Vancouver, BC area know as Snowflake Furs, have been attacked once again this year. I think this is like the fifth or the sixth attack.
Yeah, I saw that on the news recently.
So what happened was a foul-smelling substance has played a role in the attack. The first attack took place between 6 p.m. and on Monday and 10 a.m. Last week. The Vancouver Police Department said. What the police said is that an individual sprayed an unknown substance that smelled of sour milk into the mail slot of Spicer Furs, tainting the store's items with a foul odor. The next day, at around 3:45 a.m., Snowflake Furs as well was sprayed under the door, and again smelled like sour milk. Of course, in some of the province newspapers, the way this event was described and the discourse that was used, it was a toxic substance that may have, of course, potentially been
sour milk from a cow or from any mammal. Ostensibly, is toxic.
Ostensibly, we don't actually know what it is, but of course, it's not like sour milk.
And antibiotics and
definitely.
Other
so,
drugs
of course, the way it's
it.
Framed as being, you know, this horribly
kind of
violent act. It is worthwhile saying that Adrian Nelson from the Protection of Furbearing Animals said that the fur industry has a lot of cruelty behind it in the way the fur is manufactured. But I think it's important that the message gets out there of what already happens to these animals, but this isn't the way to do it. And I understand Adrian's rationale for saying it. But of course, we here at Animal Voices don't advocate or endorse any types of illegal actions towards protecting animals. But we do understand people's pain and anxiety and empathy towards these kind of practices. And of course, we also respect it. Diversity of tactics when it comes to ending the exploitation of animals.
I saw the owner and manager of the store on the news, and she basically said herself, you know, if you don't have to like fur, right, but this is not the way to do it, which I have to agree with. So, Elon, do you know if anyone has claimed responsibility, like ALF or anything like that?
We don't know yet. There was no communiques that were released. I tried to look for it.
Good for you. Good research.
But, of course, most likely the Animal Liberation Front would claim responsibility for it. Or if they haven't, they probably will see an strategic opportunity to claim responsibility. And if they go for it, then, you know, good for them. The next piece of news that we ought to be reporting about today, actually the Tolton Nation, which is a nation in Dease Lake, BC, near the Totoga Lake Resort that's in the interior of BC, have announced that they're going to be opposing a new mining project that's going to be developed in that area. The Red Chris Mine is within the territory of the Tahltan Nation, who have occupied that territory for centuries. The specific area where the Red Chris Mine is being constructed is home to many species of animals, including stone sheep, mountain goat, moose, and caribou. And of course, the nation is much concerned that the mine will destroy the animals' habitat and calving grounds that is sacred to the Tahltans. The Tahltan leadership has spoken out strongly against the mine and criticized the BC mine permitting process that is viewed as corrupt. The BC Liberal government has given free rein to mining companies, leaving the environment vulnerable to contamination and disruption. Tahltans have serious concerns with the design of the tailings ponds. Tailings ponds, of course, those trails from the chemicals and all that kind of gross stuff that happens from mining projects, or even from projects like the tar sands that have all that really nasty stuff that's really harmful to the environment being collecting it in kind of pools or ponds. So, of course, those tailing ponds and potential leakages from the mine have wide-scale environmental catastrophic impacts and possibilities for really bad consequences. And, of course, they will result in awful, awful news for the animals and the communities and that area. So good for them for opposing, and hopefully we'll hear more about this, that the mine will not be developed. And those have been your headlines for August 31st, 2012.
Thank you, Elon. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Now, one place in the world that I had been wanting to go to for what seems like eons now is New York City. And I have to say that much of the appeal of visiting the Big Apple was precisely to explore the impressive plant-based foods that this metropolitan mecca has to offer. I'm always reading and hearing about how New York is the number one city for the most varied and multiple options for compassionate eating in North America, so that is where my stomach led both Denise and I, plus her friend Leslie, for part one of our vegan vacation this summer, which started in New York and then proceeded on to Washington, D.C., which we may have to talk about another day. So we ask listeners to please keep in mind what compassionate plant-based eating means. When we are eating foods that who didn't have mothers or a face, when we are eating foods that didn't involve torture and then slaughter of innocent creatures who wanted to live in order to satisfy our appetites, that is eating and therefore living as compassionately as possible with our fellow animals in mind. And that's largely what eating vegan is all about, not to mention many other benefits. So now, how do we give just service to offering recommendations on some of the best vegan food establishments that the city of New York has to offer in only 14 minutes or less? Well, very quickly, I would think, or perhaps we'll have to revisit this topic in the future. To cite our long list of all the eateries that we ate in, yes, just four and a half days, they were, in no particular order, V-Note Restaurant, Caravan of Dreams, Lula's Sweet Apothecary, Stogo, Sacred Chow, Candle 79, Pure Food and Wine, Blossom Cafe, Gobo, Viva Herbal Pizzeria, and the renowned food truck called the Cinnamon Snail, which I think should be renamed as Pure Decadent Heaven. But then again, quite a few of the places that we went to could be called that as well. Because it was such a whirlwind of copious varieties and amounts of food over 4 days, I asked Denise to come on the show to help me reminisce, just because there's just so much food to remember. So once again, thanks, Denise. And I'd like to ask you to start, out of the 11 places that I've listed, what were some of the most memorable meals for you, and why?
Okay, I'll mention some that are probably my top three. Do you remember this tiny little sandwich shop in Greenwich Village called Sacred Chow?
Yes, I wrote some notes on that. Yeah, that was fun.
I think that was the beginning of my two-week-long sandwich tour.
Right. And your adventure of Satan, as I like to call it.
Oh, right, yeah. I had something there called Black Olive Satan Hero Sandwich, which was really awesome. And do you remember those little, what were they, coleslaws or something that came,
yep,
came with them?
Totally.
It was just a really kind of unique little place. Another, two other places that I really liked. One was Caravan of Dreams. That was near where we lived in East Village.
Yeah.
It was really lovely. They had gorgeous live music, a really nice atmosphere. The food was amazing. They had that little...
We started with a tapas sampler.
Yeah, with a whole bunch of different really
spreads.
Interesting dips and things, mm-hmm. and I just really liked that place. Another favorite was Blossom. Was it Blossom Cafe?
We went to Blossom Cafe. Then you went on Carmine Street where we met Erin Redd.
Yes.
Who's been on the show before.
And I didn't know what to order, so I asked her for recommendation. And she recommended the, what was it called, Marsala Seitan.
Yes.
Which was really,
that's
really
right.
Awesome. And the dessert was completely unforgettable.
Except I forget it.
Except
so
you forgot it. Oh, how did you forget that?
There was a chocolate thing, right?
Chocolate thing. Well, look, I don't even like chocolate, but I'm converted now. This was called
like
Kahlua chocolate tart, and it was just, you have to, if you're ever there, you have to get that.
And I should say, too, we really strategically planned. There were three of us, so pretty much we would each, we would share at least, samples of what everyone else had. So that meant we always got to have, at least three desserts at every meal.
And learned a lot about each other's character. You are the ice cream queen. Leslie is the hamburger queen, and I am the sandwich person.
Yeah, I hadn't actually reflected upon that. I'll get back to you, but just speaking of ice cream, Lula's Sweet Apothecary, so been hearing about that wonderful place forever, right? And because I knew it was going to be just about two or three blocks away from us, I remember saying, okay, I'm going to go there every day. Remember I said that?
Yep.
Because I had no boundaries. I just wanted to enjoy my food when I got there because I was on vacation. Going to eat ice cream every day from Lula's. That didn't actually happen.
There's only so much you can fit into one stomach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That didn't actually happen because we were so full all the time, even though it was so close. But we did get there once. It's a fully vegan ice cream parlor, for those who don't know, in the East Village. And what I ended up having there was the brownie sundae, which consisted of a scoop of raspberry ice cream, a scoop of peanut butter fudge ice cream, whipped cream, brownies, chocolate sauce, and candied pecans on top. And I've actually read later on that their most popular flavors are the cake batter and the peanut butter fudge. So I actually had chosen one of their most popular flavors. And they are soy, nut, and coconut milk based. So you've got quite a bit of choice there. If you can't eat soy, you can do the nut, the coconut, or if you can't eat nut, you can eat the soy. It was amazing. It was delicious. Wish I could have gone back there every day. And speaking of ice cream, too, there's another ice cream place in the East Village that we went to that I believe is owned by Kyra Sedgwick's brothers.
There's Stogo, right?
Yeah, Stogo. There's a picture of her with Kevin Bacon on the storefront. I don't really quite remember what I had there. I don't think you had anything there, but that was really wonderful too. And they had a large array of non-dairy ice creams, which is always, always wonderful. So any more highlights from you?
Well, if you proceed on to Candle.
Mm-hmm. Candle 79.
I'll chime in on that. There were a number of places that had just absolutely glorious ravioli, and that was one of the places.
Right.
Caravan was the other.
Leslie kept getting the ravioli.
Well, good on her.
Yeah. then we got a taste, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she had a saffron lobster mushroom ravioli, spinach ravioli, sautéed garlic spinach, cashew ricotta with a truffled tomato sauce. So that was wonderful. I had the seitan piccata there, which you really liked.
You
right?
always yeah. order the best things. I don't know
because
how you do it.
Because I do my research. I told you,
so.
I've been reading about New York for years and years, making mental notes of, okay, Candle 79, when I go there, I must get the seitan piccata because that's what everyone says is the best one. It was delicious.
It was good.
Cream spinach, a grilled potato cake, oyster mushrooms, which I put on the side because I don't like, and a lemon caper sauce. It was wonderful.
And how are the prices at these kind of places?
Okay, we were actually going to mention that. Really expensive for the most part, but that's because I think we chose the most expensive places. Because
so it's vegan gourmet.
Candle 79 is definitely vegan gourmet. It's actually known to be on par with as being one of the best fine dining vegan restaurants in North America, on par with Millennium in San Francisco. And I actually do have some prices here. That ravioli was $17. We got a plate of nachos that we shared. That was $16. And then the seitan piccata, I didn't write that down, but I think it was in the $20 range. It wasn't cheap, that's for sure. And it's certainly not something that you can do every day if you're just a regular person, especially or less than regular like me, who, you know, really hurting for spending all that money now. But for me, it was worth it. What I want to spend money on is amazing decadent food. And if you're going to New York once and you've got 4 days there, go to Kendall 79, go to Blossom Cafe was expensive too, and some of the other places weren't. Sacred Chow wasn't too expensive. I think the ice cream places were decently priced because you're just getting
ice cream. Not all of them were super expensive. There were some reasonable places.
Well, speaking of which, I would think the cinnamon snail, that was fairly reasonable.
Yes.
That was just regularly priced food.
Yeah, I would say so.
Was that one of your highlights, Denise? Did you really love it as much as I did?
Yes, we had a beautiful picnic in Central Park. I bought five different things from there. They had a very, very nice ancho chili sandwich on herb focaccia that was just memorable. Their cinnamon bun, of course, was very good, their namesake. I had a few other things that I didn't think were all that great. They were a little bit dry.
The raw brownie, right? You didn't care for that.
Well, it wasn't what I thought I was ordering,
right.
So yeah. And then there was a Danish and a tart that were kind of on the dry side.
I like the Danish myself. You know, it's so very rare that you actually see a vegan Danish in any bakery or store or anything. So I got one of those as well. I think it was apricot or something like that.
Mm.
Just going back, if you haven't heard of the cinnamon snail, it's this illustrious all vegan food cart, which I actually just found about earlier this year when Erin Redd featured the proprietors of the Cinnamon Snail on her podcast. If you want to listen to that, her podcast site is erinredd.com. I recommend checking that out. And these Cinnamon Snail guys, they're crazy, but they actually make some crazy good food. And that ancho chili seitan burger that you had, I actually wrote that one down. Beer simmered onions and garlic, arugula, piri piri pepper sauce, and horseradish cream on grilled herb focaccia. They had a lot of baked goods too as well in their display case.
They
had a really long lineup there, but it was worth the wait because it gave you a chance to peruse the menu and actually decide what you wanted to get.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and I, we kept each other's places in line and we went up to the display case to see what we wanted. I got so much. I knew this was my only chance to ever go there. And they're also in different locations every single day too. So it just happened that they actually were in a decent location, actually just two blocks away from Central Park. So we just walked over there, as you said, and had a beautiful picnic. And they have all these amazing savory and sweet baked goods in their display case. That alone, I think, could be their food cart. And I think it was lots of donuts. They were actually really good. You know, I don't like cake donuts. I actually like these ones. They were really delicious. Speaking of donuts, remember we went there at the end of the day because we wanted to go back to get more food, but they were closed. I knew they closed at 3, but I forgot. I lost track of time. They were closing up. They were ready to leave. So we're like, oh, we could see them practically driving off. And then the guy comes out, and I guess he saw us with our boxes of cinnamon snail stuff, and he gave us a box of the rest of their donuts for free. So that was just amazing and
that
sweet.
Nice.
And yeah, we have time to maybe chat about one more place. What would you like to...
How about Pure Food and Wine?
I was going to say Pure Food and Wine
since
as well.
That's the only raw one that we went to, right?
That's right. I mean, there's so many raw places. I would have liked to have tried more. Very quickly, I know you said before that you had the best cheesecake ever in your life.
Ever in my life. It was ginger. It was very intense and smooth and really, really awesome.
That's fantastic. I remember I wasn't even hungry when we went there. This is also another, it's a all raw, it's like another must go to place to go in New York. It's very fine dining, very expensive.
They also have the best cheese, vegan cheese that I've ever had
Dr.
in my
Cow
life.
Cheese. Yeah, they don't make that.
Absolutely
but
no comparison to
Dr.
any
Cow.
Other commercial vegan cheese.
I got that in Los Angeles once, Dr. Cow cheese. It's all raw and also very expensive, also very delicious. And we had that with dehydrated crackers, blueberries, and watercress. So that was another wonderful experience.
And it's not weird cheese. It tastes like a very, very good quality, normal, dairy-based cheese, basically.
As a lot of the non-dairy cheeses are these days, I think.
Yeah, they're getting better.
All in all, we just covered so much of the vegan foodscape in New York in our 4.5 days there, but I still feel like we just barely scraped the surface of what the city has to offer, which is why I need to go back. So, coming back with me, please, Denise.
Oh, yeah, we have to go to Angelica and the Organic Grill and quite a few other places.
These are places that were in our backyard and we didn't even get to. There are just too many options. Not to mention, it's just actually a really cool city to go to. Obviously, it's New York City. It's got so much to offer, just so many sights to see, so much culture to experience. I mean, we could do a whole show on that, but that wouldn't really be animal rights related. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you can stay tuned for another compassionate eating segment on New York City sometime in the future. and Elon. It's my turn. So we've got some events for you. I wanted to talk about our end of summer beach potluck that we Animal Voices Radio are co-hosting with Raw BC. This is going to be next Sunday, September the 9th at 5:30 p.m. We're having it at the large covered picnic area at John Henry Park, which is also Trout Lake Park, at the entrance, which is at, you enter in through the entrance at East 19th Avenue at BC Parkway, and then we'll be at the large covered picnic area, so it'll be easy to find us. So Raw BC is teaming with us, Animal Voices Radio, to bring you an end of summer outdoor potluck celebration. Everyone's invited to attend, and we encourage an environment that is welcoming and respectful of people of all eating lifestyles, sexual orientations, shapes and sizes, and ages. This is a family-friendly event. It's also an animal-friendly event, and we ask that each person brings a vegan dish serving 8 to share, free of all animal products, including dairy, eggs, honey, and gelatin. Also a serving utensil, a plate, cup, and cutlery for your own meal. And please bring an ingredients list for your dish if you can remember to do that, and be sure to note whether it is a raw dish or not. Bringing raw food is encouraged. I also just want to mention too, but if you don't have time to prepare a dish or don't want to, you just want to come by and see what's going on, you are still welcome to come with no food. We just want to see you there. I think it's going to be fun. Our covered area seats 50, but apparently they say 150, but there's about 50 seats there. So I would recommend bringing a blanket or a chair in case of overflow into the neighboring grass, because I think it's going to be very well attended. Also bring musical instruments and frisbees, balls, etc. if you want to do that. And there's also going to be a raffle with some great prizes, lots of books, vegan cupcakes, jewelry, food packages, chocolate, and more. All funds raised for the raffle will go towards supporting the Animal Voices show. And Elon, you've got some more headlines for us.
I do have some more headlines. On Thursday, there was a rally outside the law court in North Vancouver. Animal rights protesters rallied yesterday at the bail hearing of the owner of a German Shepherd who was found abandoned in Kitsilano dumpster in Vancouver, BC. They were carrying signs outside demanding an end to animal abuse. About 50 people marched outside the Vancouver Provincial Court while a bail hearing of Brian Whitlock, that's the individual who was the companion, or I suppose the abuser of...
Not a very good companion.
The abuser of Captain Whitlock was charged with criminal harassment unrelated to the plight of Captain the German Shepherd, who was found badly beaten and dehydrated in the Kitsilano dumpster. Organizers said they want to use the rally to demand justice for Captain and other abuse towards animals. The group said that the law needs to be changed to help end the tragedies like Captain's. The group expressed dismay that those responsible for the death of Captain have not yet been charged, and the BCSPCA has recommended criminal charges against Whitlock for causing unnecessary pain or suffering to our animal, to this animal. There is a maximum penalty of 5 years in jail and a lifetime ban of owning animals if anyone is convicted or if he is convicted for this. But it's worth saying, of course, for people who are interested in this kind of case and thinking about what exactly jail means for people like animal abuse, and is jail a good solution towards animal abuse, you can check out our show a couple weeks ago on August 10th, which is actually Prison Justice Day. We had a show about prison justice and how actually prisons and the criminal justice system doesn't actually go towards any process towards ending animal abuse. It merely is a band-aid solution towards it, and those people who are convicted of it don't actually go towards any sort of rehabilitation programs, and they end up actually oftentimes in Canada, across North America there's many programs within jail systems where they actually go and work in slaughterhouses as part of their mandatory labor. So the jail system doesn't seem to be any way and any process to actually be ending animal abuse. The next piece of information is that in Spain, Spain's public broadcast television station, Televisión Española, that's TVE, after 6 years of viewers being unable to watch in real time bullfighting, was finally decided to be broadcasting bullfighting back on the air. A fight at the bullring at Valladolid is set to be broadcast on the 5th of September, allowing bullfight fans to see half a dozen animals killed on the sand of the city's arena. The decision to show live bullfighting comes after the Conservative People's Party, that's PP, of Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy took control of the broadcaster's board at board and change at senior management. It's actually worthwhile to quickly highlight two pieces of quotes from this. Of course, the reason the television station is doing this, they say that they believe that the potential audience might be attracted to this lineup is in itself a sufficient reason for broadcasting it. So for them, of course, it's the interests of capital that allows them to do this. It's not about the animals. It's about more funding for this TV station and ratings. And the other thing is that the Spanish fans said that this is a part of their culture and they don't want to go outside of their culture. This is something part of it. But of course, we need to notice, instead of thinking that the Spanish culture is somehow barbaric or savage, we need to notice that culture is something that is
it's very fluid and evolving
and contingent. So obviously, there are people within Spain who are against this. So it's not fair to say that it's part of the Spanish culture. It's part of a certain history of the Spanish culture, but there are many people opposing that.
Slavery is a part of our culture. We don't do it anymore.
Definitely.
Thank you for that, Elon. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today's feature interview is with Vancouver-based animal activist Marley Daviduk. Marley has been an activist for the animals for 13 years now. In 2011, she went to Japan twice to document the dolphin slaughter as part of the Sea Shepherd Society Cove Guardian campaign. And in September of 2011, she joined the Sea Shepherd team on the Bob Barker vessel for 6 months as a crew member for the Antarctic anti-whaling campaign against the illegal Japanese whaling fleet. Along with her campaign colleagues, she was able to literally save more than 760 whales. Since returning to Vancouver this year, Marley has launched a campaign to have shark fins banned in BC. Marley is here today to speak to us about the Cove Guardian campaign in light of the annual Taiji Japan dolphin slaughter starting up again soon, which officially recommences tomorrow on September the 1st. Hello, Marley, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, you've been involved in a lot of different work for the animals this past year, but because the annual Taiji Dolphin Drive will be starting tomorrow in Japan, I'd like to focus our talk on this atrocity and to learn about your experiences there. We have done shows before on what is happening in Taiji, but for our listeners who are not yet aware, can you give us a brief summary of what this annual Dolphin Drive is and the slaughter and what it entails and is all about?
Well, it starts in September every year, and it runs through March. And that's the season that the government sort of allows this dolphin drive to happen. And sort of the focal point of it is Taiji, where a lot of it is happening. And the fishermen, starting September, out and entire pods of dolphins. They'll pick out the young females for the entertainment trade for aquariums, and the rest of them will be slaughtered for their meat.
And do you know how many dolphins are killed annually or how many are being sent to the entertainment industry every year from Taiji?
We don't know how many are being sent to the entertainment industry. I think the numbers might be out there, but I don't have an exact estimate. We know that between 16 to 23,000 dolphins are being and porpoises are being killed in Japan every year. In Taiji, it's approximately 1,500 to 2,000. The bulk majority of them are being killed up in Iwate Prefecture in northeastern Japan, and that's the Dall's Porpoise Slaughter, which is the largest cetacean slaughter on the planet, which was stopped when the tsunami happened. It's just started up again this year.
And just to be clear, now those porpoises and dolphins are being slaughtered for consumption, correct? Which is, I believe, illegal.
Well, they are being slaughtered for consumption, and if tested, because some of them have been tested, they have shown to have above Japan's mercury level. So I guess, yeah, it would be against Japanese law to sell it, because anything that's above their mercury limit should not be sold.
So please tell us about the Cove Guardian campaign and how you got involved to take part in this last year. I understand you were there twice last year in March and September.
Well, the Sea Shepherd Cove Guardian campaign is a campaign for people that they can take part, anybody in the world can take part. It doesn't matter your age. There's young people, old people, people with children that go. And our job is to monitor the slaughter that's happening in Taiji, and not just to monitor it. We're there to basically harass the fishermen and to let them know that the world is watching, and we want to make sure that they don't get away with anything, and that everything that they do is on film, and that we capture it and spread it around so that the world has this sort of a current, I guess, current footage on what's actually happening there to keep people motivated to call the embassy and create change.
How did you get involved in it, and what made you decide to go to Japan to be a Cove Guardian?
Well, I first found out about this through the documentary The Cove, and I've been following Sea Shepherd for years, and when I found out about their Cove Guardian campaign, I thought, this is something that I can do. I fundraised to get there both times, and it's an amazing experience. Obviously, it's quite depressing and upsetting, but I would love to go back this year, because I really feel like, I think we have approximately between 4 to 20 activists at a time through September and March, and I think that if we had 100 activists there, that we could possibly stop. So I think that it's really important for people to take part in this campaign.
Okay, and can you take us through what your day-to-day activities would entail when you were there as a Cove Guardian last year?
Well, our job, we get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we head out to the harbor, and we drive up this road that sort of overlooks the harbor, and we'll be watching the weather network to see whether it's going to be windy or rainy, and if it's going to be windy and rainy, the dolphin hunters won't go out because they can't see the dolphin surface weather. Don't go out, then we drive around the city to the multiple spots where captive dolphins are being held, and we monitor their treatment and their condition. A lot of them are sick, a lot of them are depressed and showing signs of neurotic repetitive behavior. We've got footage of them being tube-fed and medicine being administered to them. And a lot of those dolphins are ones that have just been taken out of the wild, and they're put into sea pens where they're sort of acclimatized and they start their training. And you see a lot of depression. You see dolphins that are refusing to eat and having to be tube-fed, and just really lethargic behavior because they've gone from swimming for hundreds of miles out of the sea to these sea pens, which are 25-foot square.
I'm wondering what it was like for you to watch these dolphins being trained and literally having their spirits taken away. Does it make you think what it must be like for these magnificent wild creatures who have suddenly been captured and now are being held against their will and forced to act as prisoners for the purposes of being sent to aquariums all around the world and for the purposes of entertainment to human beings?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people who do go to aquariums, they don't realize how violent this training process is, that there's food withheld from them. We had to watch the training of a young white Pacific white-sided dolphin that we nicknamed Peanut, where they were trying to train him to jump out of the tank onto the cement and hold his tail up in the air. So they were holding this food in front of him, but because he was so small, he had trouble getting up out of the tank, and when they slide back off of it, they had to slide over the edge of the pool, which is quite sharp, and we could tell that it was digging into his internal organs and his ribs, and he couldn't do it, and he was trying and trying, but they just wouldn't give him that food, and they were, you know, forcing him to perform this trick that was obviously hurting him, and it was just really disturbing to watch.
Speaking of disturbing to watch, you witnessed dolphins being slaughtered, and of course there's not many people out there who come back to talk about that, because there's not a lot of people watching that. It's being kept away from us. Can you describe for us what your experience was like seeing the dolphins being slaughtered and exactly what that entailed?
Well, I think I left off before on our sort of daily schedule, and I said that if the dolphin hunters don't go out, we would go monitor the captive dolphins. If they do go out, then we head to the lookout, and we may wait for about 4 hours to see if the banger boats are coming back in formation. And if they're coming back in formation, it means they're driving dolphins in it. At that point, we would split up around the city to get different vantage points to film them driving in the dolphins. And in the 3 weeks that I was there this September, we had to witness one slaughter, and they drove in an entire pod of striped dolphins. And it was really disturbing because they fought for their lives. They fought to get away. And they're only as strong as their weakest member, and they actually had a newborn baby with them. And once that baby tired out, the pod wouldn't go any further. They absolutely will not leave a member of their pod, and that's why it's so easy to drive them in, because they act as one. And at that point, the adults surrounded that baby and in a formation to protect him, but it absolutely didn't do any good. I watched an adult dolphin jump out of the water onto the rocks in an attempt to get away from these violent individuals, and he smashed his face on the rocks, and it was so violent and so disgusting. I was actually physically ill. And just to sort of give you an idea of what kind of people these are that are taking part in this, when one of the fishermen saw me getting sick, he was laughing at me. He just thought it was hilarious. And in the meantime, I started hearing the sound of the tails slapping against the water, which meant that they were getting stabbed. And I will never forget that sound. And at that point, we basically just turned into robots. And were, even though our hands were shaking, we knew we had to get the footage that we needed to inspire people to continue contacting the embassy.
In a press release issued by Cove Guardian leader Melissa Segal earlier this week, she says, as Cove Guardians, we are sentries here in Taiji to shine an international spotlight on the atrocities, and our presence is making a difference. Each year, fewer and fewer dolphins are slaughtered. What are your feelings on how effective the Cove Guardian campaign is to eventually end the dolphin slaughter in Japan, Marley?
Well, I think it's effective in different ways. I think the fact that they know that every move is monitored and filmed, they are killing less dolphins. They're even doing things like they'll take the dolphin that they want for the entertainment trade and let the pod go, where they never did that before. They just would kill every single pod that they would get in there.
Right.
And I think they're trying to appease the public by, you know, letting some dolphins go, but obviously some are still getting killed. Another thing, another way that we're effective is that we're costing them a lot of money. We're costing them over $1 million in security costs just by being there, because everywhere we go, we have a full-time police unit that follows us, and their job is to make sure that we don't get assaulted by the fishermen and that that we don't cross any boundaries and trespass. So that's costing them a lot of money, and you know, eventually it's going to cost them more than what they're making off the sale of the meat for the dolphins. And hopefully if we can get enough people in Taiji, it's going to cost them more than what they're making off these entertainment dolphins as well.
I want to point out as well that Sea Shepherd's mandate is to not do anything illegal. So your role is to simply be there with your presence. You're not allowed, unfortunately, to rescue dolphins.
Yeah, absolutely. We cannot break the law as Sea Shepherd activists. But a lot of people say, like, well, why don't you let the dolphins go? Like, that would seem like it would make sense, and it's been done by other groups. But when these dolphins that are taken for the entertainment industry, they're taken out of their pods, a lot of them are young. And a lot of them don't know how to function on their own. They've been following the matriarch of their pods. They've been living as a family unit, and they get taken away, and they get put in these sea pens with dolphins of different species and different ages. And there is instances where dolphins would jump out of the sea pens, and they would not leave. They would simply just do circles around these sea pens waiting for food, because number one, they will not leave these other dolphins that they've grown to know. Number two, they don't know where to go. They don't have a pod to follow. And people speculate that to actually be able to let the dolphins go, that you'd have to let every single dolphin go in the vicinity of the area and actually drive them out the same way that they were driven back in. It's not a matter of cutting the nets and the dolphin's just going to escape back to the open ocean. It just it has not worked that way. And after seeing, you know, these dolphins that have freed themselves, and you think, why are you staying here? Why are you not leaving? Because they just don't. It doesn't work that way.
I think that's information that people definitely don't know. I'd like for you to talk a bit about the Vancouver Aquarium's involvement in the Taiji dolphin slaughter. What is the link there between our local aquarium and the slaughter?
It's a very shameful, dirty link that the Vancouver Aquarium tries to cover up. That twice in the last, since they've opened, they have purchased dolphins from Japan from drive slaughters. There are two Pacific white-sided dolphins. One of them passed away last year. One of them still alive. They came from Futo, which is one of the bloodiest cities in Japan. The footage that came out of Futo was some of the most horrific that I've ever seen. And those two dolphins, their pods got slaughtered, and they were taken. And the Vancouver Aquarium tells the public that they were rescued from fishing nets. Well, that's not the case. Dolphins don't get rescued from fishing nets in Japan. It just doesn't work that way. So they didn't purchase them from Japan. They bought them from a supplier that bought them from Japan, so they're 1 degree separated from it, but they don't just, I think they like to claim that these animals are rescued, but
they're not going to say that they're being taken from the slaughter in industry or an industry like the cove that everyone knows about.
And not to mention their belugas, our adult belugas that they have, they were taken out of the wild in Canada. So I absolutely encourage people to boycott the Vancouver Aquarium as long as they have cetaceans. And the most important thing that people can do to fight the Vancouver Aquarium, is to email the Vancouver Park Board. They're the ones that have the lease that allows them to have cetaceans, and they're the ones that can take that away from them and tell them that they're not allowed to import any more whales or dolphins.
So back to the Cove Guardian campaign, as you mentioned before, you said anyone can be a Cove Guardian. Is that right? Is just anyone who wants to go can decide that that's something that they want to do? And I'd like to know what the logistics are that would be involved if someone wants to take this leap for the animals all the way literally to Japan to act for the dolphins.
Yeah, it's something that, I mean, in the past, people, seniors have gone, people have brought their kids. You got to pay your way there, and it costs, you know, I think I paid around $1,000 for my ticket. You're paying around $40 to $50 a night for your hotel. We all stay in the same hotel. We all act as a group there. You may have to pay for a rental car depending on what's happening there at the time, how many people are there at the time with a rental car already, and you have to pay for your own food. I paid for my way there both times with fundraising, and then the second time I ended up selling my truck to pay for it. But it's very much doable. A lot of people, you know, some people will stay there for a week, which is a lot more, you know, financially a lot more doable. Or some people go for 2-3 weeks, and just depends on your funds. And some people stay for the full 3 months that they can in Japan, but it's very much accessible to any member of the public who wants to take this step. And for people who think that, oh, there's no way I can do it, I could not witness something like that, I said the same thing. And once you're there and you realize that if you weren't there, that those dolphins would be dying without anybody witnessing it, and those dolphin fishermen would be free to treat them in any inhumane manner that they wanted, and it can get a lot worse for them if the fishermen think that nobody's watching.
So for those people who aren't prepared or able to go to Japan to fight the dolphin slaughter, what do you recommend that they do in their own backyards? For instance, I know that locally there is a demonstration in Vancouver today at the Japanese embassy. Perhaps you can tell us about that.
Yeah, generally every year on the 1st of September when the hunt starts, there's a demonstration at the Japanese embassy. It starts at noon and it goes till 3 on this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And you can head down there and just let the Japanese embassy know that we're aware of what's starting today. Other than that, the most important thing that you can do if you can't go to Japan is to get the email and the phone number of the Japanese embassy in Vancouver and put it on your fridge and be prepared to call it as much as possible between September through March.
Or in your own city, I should mention, if you're not in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Sea Shepherd does a live feed for the whole season. So they will be Twittering live anything that's happening there. If the hunters go out, they're going to be driving dolphins in. You'll get a minute-by-minute update. So you can phone the Japanese embassy and let them know, we know there's dolphins being driven into the cove right now, and we want action taken. And not just phoning them or emailing them once. Let them get to know you over the next 6 months. They have an actual voicemail dedicated to this issue in Vancouver because they get so many calls about it.
That's excellent. Very quickly, just to wrap up here, I know you're involved in other facets of the animal protection movement. Could you please give us a summary on the local anti-shark finning campaign that you've been working on here in Vancouver? We did feature Anthony Marr on the show a few months ago to speak about that when it was just sort of starting up. What is the latest update on what's happening with getting rid of shark finning in Metro Vancouver?
Well, we're working on two parts of the campaign, both targeting the sales with protests every Friday night, testing at Fortune Garden Seafood Restaurant, 1475 West Broadway, in an effort to get them to take shark fin off the menu, as well as a legislation campaign. We're appearing as delegations in this September in front of Surrey and Langley, and we have more that we're planning. And we're pushing for a provincial ban and then hopefully eventually a federal ban. So if people want to get involved in that, they can email us at VancouverAnimalDefenseLeague@live.ca or go to our blog at VancouverAnimalDefenseLeague.blogspot.com. freequincychange.blogspot.com.
Well, thank you so much, Marley, for coming on the show today to speak with us about your experiences as a Cove Guardian and Sea Shepherd volunteer, as well as your part in the local anti-shark finning campaign. To find out more about the animal activism work that Marley is doing locally in Vancouver, please visit vancouveranimaldefenseleague.blogspot.com. And if you want to find out more about the Cove Guardian campaign or even apply to be a Cove Guardian, visit seashepherd.org. Thanks so much, Marley. Take care.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio on unceded Coast Salish Territories, Canada. And you may have heard the news that on September 10th, that's Monday at 1 p.m., we'll be switching to our new broadcasting channel. It's going to be a bit left of the dial at 100.5 FM. The station will be in the same location, and our programming schedule will be the same, but will sound a bit crispier and a bit brighter.
Crispy.
We here at Animal Voices Show ask you to keep connected with us via the internet. You can do so by signing up on our Facebook page. That's at Animal Voices Vancouver. Or you could join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR for those of you who do some tweeting. You can also send us your suggestions, comments, criticisms, anything to keep us accountable to the community, wherever you are, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website at www.animalvoices.org, where our shows can be downloaded from, and all the previous shows we actually spoke about today can be found in our archive sections. If you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and veganism, please do show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at our website. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thanks for listening to Animal Voices, and we're going to be leaving you with a song called the Dolphin Song, Angel of the Sea by Carol Cox. Thanks. And actually inspired by the film The Cove, and she'll be actually singing that song today at the process. For those of you who can make it out there, we'll be seeing Allison and Denise there shortly. Thank you.
my journey to bring peace and unity. This I vow, you show me how by being love sent from above. And as I watch you, I'm amazed how any man could sell his soul and raise his hand to force your silence for eternity. As I swim deeper into myself, I understand as the tide must come to land, so I must free my angel of the sea.